After a string of tragedies and a rising awareness in their wake, America is obsessed with bullies. Lots of schools have zero tolerance codes for bullying, and the very word just keeps popping up more and more in everyday life. But our guest today says the way that we're handling the bully problem is just making things worse for our kids and hurting their chances to thrive. Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest today is Susan Eva Porter. She's worked in schools for over 20 years as a teacher, counselor, and administrator, and she's the author of the new book, Bully Nation, just out this month. And Susan Eva Porter, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Veronica.
So the word bully, let's talk about that. It's gotten pretty huge. It's pretty much used all the time now, and not just among kids, among grown-ups as well. What's wrong with calling someone out as a bully?
Well, first, my work is really thinking about children. So I will reserve my comments to kids who are under 18. But here's one of the major problems, and I think there are a number of them. When we label a child in any way, whether it's bully, stupid, you know, you can think of lots of different things, but research is showing us that even if we label children with quote-unquote positive terms like smart, what we're doing is imposing a fixed view of that child. And I think once we start seeing children in a fixed way, we're really in trouble because childhood is, if nothing else, all about growth, development, change. And so the terms themselves are very, very important. And we're using these terms that are really inflexible and, of course, negative.
I can see what you're saying. I also see the point that, you know, for years there was not really a common language for talking about what was happening to kids in schools, and that in a way it was sort of a coming out and being able to give something a name that was scary, and that maybe we're still in the phase of that being kind of liberating and healthy.
Well, I would disagree. I certainly think it's important for those of us who work with kids and parents to be paying very close attention to what happens to children. And when they are feeling pain, of course, we have to pay attention. And when they're misusing their aggression, when they are figuring out how to manage their aggression, we have to give them language for that too. But I think the language needs to describe behavior, and what labels do is describe character. And those are very, very different things. So it's not a question of not looking at what's happening. It's a question of looking at what's happening and naming it in a way that gives us flexibility to intervene in the best interests of the child. And I think the labels we use now keep us very angry, they're very inflammatory, and they make us divest instead of invest in children. Who wants to invest in a bully? Nobody.
But what about that history that you yourself write about in your book about just sort of sweeping these problems under the rug and not having that language to talk about it with?
Well, As I said, I think we absolutely have to have a language, but this isn't it. And this is really part of what my mission was in writing this book, is that this language is getting us in much bigger trouble than, in fact, the problems that kids are having actually warrant. So this language is inflaming us, and especially in the media, to the point where we're not seeing what kids are doing accurately, and the language doesn't give us tools to intervene in a way that's really helpful for children. And what it does is it empowers us to remain angry and to see children in very black and white terms. And that is really, really damaging for them.
So is there such a thing as a bully, a definition of a bully that you would agree to? Or do you think that, you know, just on the whole, we shouldn't be using that word?
I don't think we should use it at all, not for children. As I said, my work is looking at what's happening with kids. And I, if we want to use it in the adult realm, that's something that, you know, adults' characters are much more fixed. But the same way, I would never use the term stupid for a child. Never. Because that is a completely ineffective way to help them and to describe the situation. So you label a child bully, and what about all of the other characteristics of that child? I can guarantee you the label bully is going to outweigh all of those other characteristics in our minds, and also in the mind of the child. So if we're actually interested in helping children, we're going to think hard about whether we want them hearing themselves in the terms we're describing with what I call this bully language. I've worked with kids who have been called bullies by adults, and they know they've been called bullies by adults, and they, first of all, are very resentful, as they should be, but they're also not invested at all in changing or examining themselves in the way the adults want them to, because what they feel is just the adults' resentment and anger, but more importantly, they feel that the adults have written them off. Now, whether that's in fact true is irrelevant if that's what the language causes them to believe. So when a child feels written off by an adult, it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic, especially if that adult is charged with their welfare.
And what about in, you know, an extreme case? I mean, we've seen the headlines about students who commit suicide, maybe because their classmates have launched an online campaign on Facebook against them, saying really cruel and damaging things. What about a situation like that that's more to the extreme? How would you go about unpacking what's going on there if we're not using this terminology?
Well, let me say, so I like your term unpacking. I think it's a great term, and that this language doesn't allow us to unpack anything. Because if we call someone a bully and somebody a victim, that's it. The suitcase is full and it is not getting unpacked. If we want to unpack it, we've got to look at all of the context of that situation. First of all, there's been a wildly conflated, there's been a great conflation between suicide and bullying that doesn't bear out in the statistics. And this is something that the suicide prevention people are trying to get the message out. Now, that doesn't mean kids don't commit suicide, and that doesn't mean it isn't a horrible, horrible tragedy. But 95% of children who commit suicide have a psychiatric disorder at the moment where they act. And so to say that that disorder is connected to the behavior of other kids is difficult. And this is part of the unpacking. You can't unpack that if what you're doing is claiming that this is a bully situation. So let's absolutely unpack it. But my claim is you can't do that once you use bully language.
Well, we've been talking about this kind of in the abstract, but I know your book is full of stories. And one of them, which makes a compelling point for what you're talking about, is this girl named Mary. I don't know if that's her real name, but you begin your book with her story and how engaging with these labels, calling kids bullies and bystanders, and why weren't they allies, really, at the end of the day, it wasn't that helpful for anybody, including Mary. And I wonder if you could just tell us her story and walk us through it.
Well, you know, many of the stories in my book are amalgams, and I really started to pay attention to this issue. I've been working in schools for a long time, and let me also say that there's no statistic, and my personal experience bears out the fact that kids are no different than they've ever been. That means they can still be mean and nasty, but they're no meaner and nastier than they ever have been. But so I started to pay attention. I started to be alarmed, actually, when I was hearing this, this bully language. And it came out, especially around girls, with the mean girl label. But what was happening is adults were getting so angry at the situation between kids in a way they never had before. But so the situation with Mary, so here's a girl, middle school, and she's being left out, and she's being left out persistently, and it hurts. And let me tell you, it really hurts. And I don't mean to deny for one moment that children don't feel tremendous pain at the hands of their peers. They do. And it is brutal when you're going through it, and it's very hard to watch. And so this kid, Mary, was being excluded, and she was going home at the end of the day, like many kids do at middle school, and they burst into tears because middle school is just hard to get through every day, and often bursting into tears is an appropriate response after a day of middle school.
Right.
And she felt that these girls were causing her distress, and certainly this situation of being left out was very distressful to her. But there was now this language, this bully language, and she felt very victimized, which is a very, very common feeling in middle school. And the middle school brain tends to feel victimized quite a lot. And because kids at this age don't have the capacity for great abstraction, they can pick a target and say, this is what's causing me to feel pain, and so this is what she did. And again, I'm not saying she wasn't feeling real pain, and we didn't need to attend to it. But so she started to hinge on this fact that she had been bullied, and this really upset her parents, understandably so. They saw a distraught child, and the way she was describing it was, these kids have done this. And because this was happening, once we had this inflammatory language, then the parents started to get not only concerned for the child, but really, really distressed, because they thought, oh my God, if these other girls are bullies and our child is a victim, this could be just fatal for this child. And this is where, you know, fears of suicide come into the head of parents. And so the parents went to the school and were just enraged themselves. So now the rage is starting to spread, and it's starting to infect the parents. And again, I'm not saying the parents shouldn't have a reaction, and I don't want to judge their reaction. In part, it was because around this fear that this language causes. You can't say to a parent, your child has been bullied, without them feeling fearful and angry. If you say to a parent, your child is involved in a dynamic and your child's feeling pretty bad about it, let's see what we can do to help them and fix the situation. That's a very different way of talking about
it. It is very different, and I can see how it might not be as satisfying to that angry parent. I mean, it is satisfying
Absolutely.
To say, hey, that kid is a bully and my kid is a victim,
right.
And someone had better fix this right now.
That's right. And so parents storm into the school, and so the anger is starting to spread, as you see. It's sort of infectious. And not only is the anger spreading, but the idea that the situation is simple is spreading. And this is what this language does. It simplifies extremely complex situations. I am not saying that my way of seeing this is going to make solutions easier. But bully language never provides solutions, because it keeps us thinking that things are black and white, and it keeps us angry and scared. So, yes.
Well, just give us the end of that story with Mary. So her parents get involved, they're mad, and the school comes down on the bullies, and then what happens?
Well,
in terms of what
nothing.
Kind of, you know, redemption there might have been or not have been for the kids involved.
Well, I think this is one of the reasons that I became interested in this issue, is because there was no resolution that satisfied anybody. So the girls that were called bullies and their parents were very upset, because, let me tell you, kids get left out in middle school all the time. And sometimes it has to do with how many seats there are at the table. Sometimes it has to do with the very pettiness of middle school. Sometimes it has to do with people being thoughtless and careless, which is another very common trait of middle school kids. The other thing is, Mary didn't feel any better once those girls had been labeled bullies and they had to write, you know, apology notes that were completely insincere. She didn't feel any better at all. Why? Because the flip side of the bully label is the victim label. And when a child is labeled victim, there can be some satisfaction, momentary satisfaction, that, okay, I haven't done anything wrong, and that can feel good to a child, and kids love it when they're not in trouble. But there's nothing soothing in the long term about victimhood, because it doesn't, it keeps us identified with our pain, and it doesn't. So if you're Mary and you've now been the victim of bullying, and you know that those girls aren't repentant or feeling, so you feel a little more victimized because you actually aren't starting to feel better. But that's very different than somebody sitting with you, be it a parent or somebody at school, and say, I know you're really having a hard time. And that sucks. You know, but let's figure out how we can help you feel better. Let's figure out what we can do so that you can manage some of your feelings, because you're having really strong feelings. But managing really strong feelings is part of what you're going to have to learn. It's part of what everybody's going to have to learn. That's a very, very different approach, because it empowers the child. It doesn't make the child feel better instantly. Instantly, what makes the child feel better is to feel like a victim and there's the bully. But in the long run, it does nothing for the child. And then it allows them to see that their power comes with their pain, not from working through their pain. And that is a stark difference.
Well, first of all, based on what you're saying, it sounds like middle school is pretty messed up, but I guess that's another show. On the other hand, you know, you're talking about how students have to learn to manage these strong emotions, and that I can definitely see that helping with the victims, because it's sort of a helpless thing to be a victim. You're left holding a lot that you can't get rid of, and you have to figure out how to cope with that. But what about the bully? So, I mean, I guess the nice thing about the word bully is that, man, it packs a cultural punch right now. If you're a bully, I mean, that is a brand that you have to wear. And there's a definite punitive element to that that's going to linger. So how does this approach that you're talking about help with solving the problem of mean kids?
Well, first of all, kids are no meaner. No kid is just mean.
But kids act in ways that are mean.
Yes.
And sometimes repeatedly, we've got patterns going on there. So how does it help?
And that's a huge distinction. And so what you do is you talk with them and target their behavior, not their character. Calling them a bully is character assassination. Saying to them, now, you did something that had some ramifications. Let's look at that. Somebody got hurt. What were you thinking? What are you going to do different next time? And it also, it means that child may need consequences. I am a firm believer in consequences. If the behavior is repeated, if the behavior is particularly egregious, and in fact, I believe in consequences that go all the way to sometimes children need to be separated from schools, whether it's for a day or forever. So I'm not opposed to consequences, but the consequence has to fit the crime. Hmm. And a label is forever. Try calling a child bully and then the next year decide, oh, but that kid isn't a bully anymore. Now, it's very different than saying, you know, Jack had a rough period in seventh grade, but he, you know, he's really showing some improvements. Or, you know, here are his good characteristics, and yes, we're still working on the others. That's an incredibly different way of seeing a child, and that child would have adults invested in him. You know, once we label a child bully, then the only way they stop being a bully is if they move to a new planet where nobody knows them. Because that word, as you suggested, is a branding. It is a scarlet letter. And to do that to children is unconscionable. It is absolutely unconscionable, because you are depriving that child not only a future in their own head about themselves, but you've tainted how that child looks for every adult who isn't seriously thinking about this issue and deconstructing it.
Because it's in their file, I guess you're saying.
It's in their file and it's in their mind. I was just working with a child 2 days ago, and I work in a high school right now, and I'm pretty sure nobody from my high school is going to be listening to Wisconsin Public Radio this morning, so I feel like I can talk. So this is a kid who said something really nasty on a public email. And it was awful. It was really nasty. And so we called her in, and this is a very, this is a kid who's got a very, very strong bite, but she's very sad. And if you spend 2 minutes talking to her, the sadness, you know, really outweighs the bite, but the bite's bad. And the bite is pointed, and it was pointed to somebody else in the community. And I talked to a couple of adults about her, just getting a little more information, and almost all of them said, oh, yeah, that kid, oof, boy, that's a, you know, one of them even said the B word. Oh, yeah, that kid is a B. And I don't mean bully, the other word. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, she's not. She's a sad kid. She's going through some stuff. We can't see her that way. And this kid, who's a junior right now, really hates the school. Now, lots of juniors hate the school, but this kid hates the school, and she was able to articulate this to me because the adults have written her off, because the adults see her like this. So when she makes a mistake, I call it the string of pearls effect. Once you give a child the, you know, oh, that's a mean girl, that's a, you know, that's the B word, she's sunk. And so my job is going to be to work with this community, with the adults around her, and say, we have to radically, it doesn't mean we excuse her behavior at all, but I saw adult after adult just writing this child off. And it was really, it was quite shocking to me. And yet they did it, and they didn't seem to have any problem doing it. So this is the problem with labels. And this kid needs redemption. This kid has a year and a half left to go. I want this kid to have as good an experience as she can, and she's not going to be able to until the adults around her are able to see through some of her behavior. I mean, she's an adolescent. If this were a 30-year-old person at work, I wouldn't be that invested in us, you know, taking mm-hmm. this in-depth approach. But this is a child, and we are charged with her care.
Our guest today is, I'm going to jump in there so we can take our break. Our guest is Susan Eva Porter, and she's worked in schools for over 20 years as a teacher, a counselor, and administrator. And she's the author of the new book, Bully Nation, which is just out this month. And we want to know what you think about this. Do you think that the language of bullying that we're talking about this hour is too rigid and too damaging for kids to carry with them through their lives and their school careers, at least? What do you think about that? And is America's agreed-upon curriculum thus far, sort of the zero-tolerance approach, is that working? Is it helping? You can reach us and share your stories at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send your email to talk@WPR.org. And you can also chime in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I hope you'll stay with us next hour. We'll be hearing some of the fairy stories of Ireland with a guy who's been collecting them for over 40 years, one of Ireland's foremost collector of lore and stories, Eddie Lenihan. And this hour, we are talking bullies and the approach that's being taken in America. In general, it's using the labels bully and victim, and often it is this zero tolerance approach as well, after a string of tragedies that we've all seen very publicly about children who have been in situations where their peers, things are just difficult between these groups of people, and sometimes it escalates to tragic consequences. Our guest today is Susan Eva Porter. She's worked in schools for over 20 years as a teacher and counselor, and she's the author of the new book, Bully Nation, Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. And Susan, we talked about the word bully, and it does seem as though it is taking on legs of its own. I've talked to other parents who have told me, you know, that their kids who are in, say, kindergarten or first grade are coming home from sessions on bullying at the school and accusing their parents of bullying them when they want them to, you know, pick up after themselves or take a time out. It seems kind of clear that the waters are getting a little muddied on bullying. But I mean, how do we, as you're advocating, how do we pull back from that? And should we be pulling back?
And to your point about zero tolerance, what we're now doing across the nation, and most states have legislation now that is anti-bullying legislation, is we're starting to criminalize childhood behavior, which I think should pique our interest, given that children have not changed in the past generation, and yet now we are dealing with them and their misbehavior by going to the courts. And as we know, laws are black and white, and childhood is complex. And this, I think, is pretty alarming. But yes, so to your point about the kindergarten and first grade kids coming home, most schools now have mandates that they do anti-bullying education. And a big part of this education is instilling kids with these ideas of labels. Now, one thing we have to know about children is that they're very concrete. So a child can't do what you suggested we do at the top of the hour, which is unpack this issue. Children can't do that. They don't have the brains to do that. We have to do it for them. But if we only give them tools like that's a bully, you feel bad, you're a victim, they will remain stuck. We have to do the complicated work for them. But what we're doing, we are taking the easy way out. anti-bullying education, the way it is now, is the easy way out. And we should be looking at it, if for no other reason than that. We don't take the easy way out in teaching them math or teaching them how to write or teaching them how to write a historical essay. We are teaching, what we're doing with social emotional education is the easy way out. There's the bully, there's the victim. One's wrong, the other's right.
Well, let's go take our first phone call now. We've got Katie, who's joining us from Lindenhurst, Illinois. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I'm calling because I came from Illinois, from Delaware a few years ago. And in Delaware, I was asked to put together a program for a nonprofit for school children, or for children, about respect. And we chose to work with fifth graders because they're just on the cusp of that middle school awful time. And they're able to begin to think about things. And I built a 7-session program that addressed issues of respect. So we didn't use the bullying language. We talked about how people should be respectful to other people, and how if people saw people being disrespectful, that it was okay to step in and get them to think about the language they were using, or to get a teacher or whatever. But the idea behind that was that it is behaviors, and it is and how you think about what kinds of feelings you want to have in the classroom, and what kinds of feelings would you cause by your action, is pretty important.
Okay, thank you, Katie. And what do you think, Susan, about taking a respect-based approach instead?
Well, I think Katie's program should probably be instituted in every single school. It sounds great. It sounds, first of all, it's at a great time. Fifth grade is absolutely on the cusp of some of the when some of these behaviors go viral. And so she is looking at behavior, not character, and grounding it in something very positive. So when we say anti-bullying right there, just start calling it pro-respect. That right there would shift our entire perspective. So we wouldn't be fighting against something. Right now, all of the education pits us against something. And the something we're pitting ourselves against is children. We are against children when we are talking about anti-bullying. When we talk pro-respect, we're for children. Fundamentally different. Katie is absolutely right on the money.
Okay, well, thank you for the call, Katie. And next to Teresa, who's joining us in Green Bay. Hi, Teresa.
Good morning. I so appreciate your guest trying to educate the public on this topic. I have a friend who wasn't able to have children because of a physical disability, so they adopted a baby who is now 6. And she was recently telling me that this little girl, who is a bit aggressive because she has ADD, she's recently diagnosed, possibly even ADHD, but because of an incident on the playground, she was labeled a bully. Mm. And I knew there was a problem with this no tolerance when a 6-year-old was labeled as a bully.
Yeah, especially the age we have to think about. I mean, you're, Susan, saying that these terms, bully and victim, are not helpful at any point in a kid's school career. But, I mean, when they're applied when the children are in kindergarten or first grade, I mean, what do you think the consequences are there?
Oh, this is, you know, Teresa's story is just, first of all, it's really common. It's really, really common. And it is tragic. So here is a 6-year-old child. Admittedly, one with struggles. So you've got a child who has some sort of attentional difficulty. And what that means is they have a hard time regulating their behavior. So here's a child who diagnostically has a hard time regulating their behavior. And now we're making them a criminal. And if they, well, not a criminal, but, well, it depends what state you're in. It depends what they do. And so why would we invest in a child who's a bully I mean, that would be so easy to write off. And what this child needs probably more than any other child in the classroom is somebody who's absolutely invested. And this is going to mean that, hey, parents talk. And those parents of those other six-year-olds go home, and moms are going to say, and dads are going to say, well, what did little Susie do today? Did Susie hurt you? Did you have to sit by Susie? I'm going to call that teacher and make sure I don't sit by Susie. And you know what? I'm going to call the superintendent so you don't have to be in Susie's class next year, because you shouldn't have to put up with that. Oh, we're not having Susie to the birthday party. And if you don't think this happens, then you don't know what parents are like. And they're like that not because they're misguided. It's because they've been given a language that allows them to be like that. I don't fault the parents. I fault all of us are responsible for shifting this language. And until we do, Teresa's story is going to play out in school after school after school. And that child might have a really tragic ending. Because they're going to be written off.
Well, Teresa, thank you so much for your phone call. Appreciate it. As we talk with Susan Eva Porter, our guest this hour, she's worked in schools for over 20 years as a teacher, counselor, and administrator. And we're talking about her new book called Bully Nation, Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. And Susan, I want to ask you, and I don't think that you're saying this, but I want to make sure, when we're talking about the range of normal childhood behaviors, you know, these are kids are learning. Their brains are developing. They're going to do stuff that we don't want them to do. They're going to do stuff that's painful to other kids. But is part of your message that maybe kids need to toughen up a little and be a little more tolerant about some of these more unpleasant aspects of childhood?
Absolutely. And I don't... what happens, so we've been talking a lot about the damage that happens to the child who's labeled a bully. We just heard Teresa's example. But so for the child who's labeled the victim, for the child who starts identifying with their pain, they don't get the opportunity to understand what it means to move through something, to master a feeling, to master a situation. And that is about building resilience. So some of the most unresilient kids I've worked with are the ones that have been told they're victims, have been, one of the things I write about in my book, and when I work with kids and work with parents, is to let them know that feelings aren't facts. Feelings are experiences we have, and we move through them. That doesn't mean we don't attend to them. That doesn't mean they don't hurt sometimes. But when a feeling becomes a fact, and this is what's happening in, as we're talking about kids in these bully victim scenarios. So the bully, that behavior becomes a fact forevermore, and that child is a bully. For the victim, it's the feeling that's the fact. So it's not dynamic and it's not fluid, and that's where resilience comes. It's when it's when the tree can bend with the wind. Now, sometimes it's a hurricane, and I appreciate that. And I'm not saying kids don't go through really, really tough things. But if we don't say to them, yep, you know what? You're going to go through some tough things. Hey, if you have a Facebook page, this is what can happen. This is what somebody can put on your Facebook page. This is the cost of having a Facebook page. We're not doing that. We're just saying, oh, there's a bad person who said something bad on a Facebook page, instead of, well, if you have a Facebook page, this is what you might get. So that part of the education, that side of it, and I'm not even saying that's how we should educate, but in this bifurcated view that we have of black, white, bully, victim, then we better be talking about resilience. I think Katie's point about the respect curriculum would allow us to do it in more subtle ways. But yes, so resilience is going out the window in our expectation for children's resilience. And it's just thought of, oh, if you overcome victimhood, you're resilient. That isn't real resilience.
Hmm. Well, let's take another phone call. Ryan joining us from Madison. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. Great conversation today. I just wanted to talk about label a little bit more, how I think in addition to the consequences of teachers, of parents, labeling a kid a bully and then being stuck with that for their entire life, I think the bullying child themselves has the internal consequences of not just living with that label, but whether they, what to do with that information, whether they own the title of bully and then come to define themselves, you know, by that definition. And I just wanted to hear what your guests had to say about that.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Susan?
I've got to tell you, your guests are so bright.
Yeah, we have amazing colors.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Ryan, you just nailed it. I love this term internal consequences. That's just a brilliant way to think about it. And what do they do with that information? And, okay, we should all have Katie's Respect Program. And, Ryan, you've articulated, here's the problem. And so you give a child, and let's say it's a six-year-old child like the one Teresa talked about. What do they do with that information? That, if we could ask ourselves that particular question every time before we label anything, if we could ask ourselves that question, first of all, I guarantee you we wouldn't, when we're using the bully label or the victim label, we wouldn't come up with an answer that would be satisfactory to us. That's what I should have titled my book, What Do We Do With That Information? Because that's it. What does a child do? The kids I've worked with, so this child the other day I was working with, who is getting quite a, you know, nasty reputation here, she has no idea what to do with the information that's coming to her. She feels lost. She feels at sea. She feels terribly ashamed. She feels angry. She feels embarrassed. But most of all, she feels like there's no redemption. She said to me, I don't feel like my teachers are ever going to see me in a different way. That is tragic, because even if the teachers were to see her in a different way, to Ryan's point, what's behind Ryan's point is, even if the adults started to shift their view, the child might not be able to, because they had started to internalize it. So if they think, no, I'm really a bully, that is very, very, try convincing anyone in your life about something different than what they believe to be true about themselves. Just try doing it. It's impossible. And so if we start allowing children to have these internal experiences and identifications of what they are, they're stuck, and then that will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's really, really dangerous. And Ryan hit on that reality.
It seems as though the curriculum that is in place right now, though, is leading toward the zero tolerance between these words that we've been talking about, bully and victim and ally and bystander. And that's the way the wind is blowing right now. I mean, it's in place, more or less, and people are advocating for that very passionately and earnestly and with good intentions. So, I mean, how can you reroute this ship?
Well, conversations like this one, and let me tell you, I am so impressed with the three people who have called in, because please go out and start sharing your opinions, start sharing your observations, start talking about it, start challenging it. Do I think this is going to be easy? No. Do I think the road we're heading down is bad? Yes. And I think we have to start examining why, as a culture, we're so angry at children, and why, as a culture, we have started legislating against them. Remember, when we say, you know, this language removes us so much from the children, that of course we're going to be pro-anti-bullying, because we'd look awful if we weren't. But if we can start saying, well, hold on, that actually means we're anti-children, that's a different way to look at it. So I suggest people start saying, well, hold on, let's look at this, and what are the children going to do with that information, to Ryan's point, and why are we so angry and against children? So let's not call it anti-bullying, let's call it anti-children, and then the conversation shifts. And then it doesn't, right now, we're focused on kids. Let's focus on ourselves. Kids haven't changed. We have. We're different. We're responding differently. We're talking differently. And absolutely, you are right. That is the way the wind is blowing. But that doesn't mean it's right. But more importantly, it doesn't mean it's effective. And this is not going to be effective. We are going to get entrenched in a real fear and hatred toward kids and a self-righteousness on our own, because if we are anti-bully, then we get to be ourselves allied with the victim. And when you are a victim, you don't have to look at your responsibility for what's happening. And that is dangerous. When adults no longer feel the need to examine their responsibility, when they're, we've got to all, look at ourselves in our own world and at work and in our relationships. But when we stop having to examine our own practices when we deal with children, we've basically abdicated our responsibility for raising them in an ethical manner.
Our guest today is Susan Eva Porter. She's worked in schools for over 20 years as a teacher, a counselor, and an administrator. And she's the author of the book we're talking about today. It is called Bully Nation: Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. And we welcome your phone calls. What do you think about what you're hearing today? Are we too entrenched in these labels of bullying? And are they helping or are they hurting? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, as we talk bullying today with our guest Susan Eva Porter, who has worked in schools for over 20 years, including as a counselor. And she's the author of the new book, Bully Nation: Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. And we'll take another call now. We've got Steve joining us from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi, yeah. You were talking earlier about victims being resilient and well, we all have to be if we want to survive in life. But 8 years ago, my daughter was in middle school. And, sometimes I don't want to, well, no one was labeled a bully. They weren't even talking about it that much back then. But she decided to switch from one group of girls, she told me, because they were shoplifting and smoking cigarettes and stuff, and decided to go with these other girls. Well, they were kind of like the so-called popular girls. And they just tore her apart, and then she had nobody, and then she kind of went back to the other girls. And the one girl that was leading the group against her, you think sometimes, well, the bully has problems at home or something, but upon meeting her parents, they were like her. And that girl, maybe she had problems at home that we don't know about, but all the way through high school and everything, she was really popular, had a great time, was in all the clubs, did everything right, supposedly, and my daughter was left in the desert in high school after that. She went back to those other girls that were having problems. And then sophomore year, she told me, Dad, I can't hang out with them anymore because now they're using drugs and they're skipping school. So, where are the consequences in that? Where's the resolution in that? My daughter's in college now. She's met other friends. And she's a strong person, I believe, because of it. But I don't know. It's just sometimes I think bullies are bullies. And there are arrogant people out there who are mean and they don't care. So that's my comment. I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve, for calling and sharing that story. And you know what? There are a lot of people who have stories like Steve. I know some of them as well. What do you say to something like that?
Well, first of all, Steve, it sounds like your daughter has great instincts. And I would really want to give her huge pats on the back for making the kind of choices she did. So she determined at certain points that there were kids she didn't want to hang out with. And let me tell you, that is wonderful, and I would encourage every child to make those choices. If kids are stealing, kids are doing drugs, yeah, that's exactly what you want your child to do, is to say, no, that's not me. I'm going someplace else. Now, the peer group, so she, it sounds like she did all the right things to keep herself away from the elements she didn't want to be with. But here's the thing, too, and I don't mean to, your impression is your impression, Stephen, and it's right for you, but we don't know what was going on with those girls. You said this one girl sort of you know, sailed through high school. She was popular, everything. That's what it looks like from the outside. And one of the things I say to kids is don't judge your inside by somebody else's outside. And no one sails through adolescence. Now, I'm not saying that means that other girl or those girls had the experience your daughter did. That's not true at all. But first of all, talking about it as though there were just these bad kids and one good kid isn't helpful to anybody, because it means that we don't find ways to talk to your daughter about all of the good and empowering things she's doing. And it sounds like you probably did that, but that she wasn't a victim. She was a kid who made really good choices. She made really, really good choices. And those other kids, I'm not quite sure what the consequences could have been, because this kid was popular, and you know, she might have been arrogant and all of those sorts of things. But I'm not sure if we had anti-bullying laws back then. What do we do with that child? I think what's much more helpful, and what we do with kids at my school, is you bring them in and you say, you know, we've heard that this is what's going on, and you understand this is the impression that you're giving off. And also, what's your side of the story? Because there's always another side of the story. There's always another side of the story. And that's the thing about the language, is the language doesn't allow us to look at the other side of the story. But I would say, Steve, it sounds like your daughter made fabulous choices in painful social situations. And if both you and she choose to see that she went through a tough time and no one else had to suffer, I think that only hurts. I think that only causes your pain to linger, because we don't know what those other girls' experiences were, and everybody has their own hard time. So I don't want to minimize your daughter's pain, but I would want to say she did a lot of things right.
So, Steve, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And as we get toward the end of the hour here, Susan, what are some things that parents can do, even if schools have their own curriculums? What are things that parents can do if their kids have been, you know, given one of these labels, bully or victim? What can we do differently?
Well, in my book, the last chapter of my book, I offer something called the GRIT approach, and it's a 4-part approach. The G stands for growth mindset. So these labels create something called a fixed mindset. A growth mindset is abandoning the labels and seeing potential in all situations. So when you talk to your children about this, talk in terms of the solution, not the problem, and where's the potential for growth. The other thing that's really important is that we don't react the way kids do. So the R of grit is responding, not reacting. So we need to bring to bear a kind of capacity in our brain that kids don't have. We don't want to be overreacting. We want to listen before we react. Third thing is interventions, and sometimes we do need to intervene. And who are the people that can help us intervene? And also, when we intervene, we have to keep in mind the best interests of every child. And the final thing is teaching resilience and teaching. And, you know, it sounds like Steve's daughter developed a lot of her resilience. And here's the thing is people will say, yeah, but wouldn't it have been great if she could have learned all of that without the pain? Well, you know what? We actually don't learn how to be resilient without pain. And I'm sorry she felt pain, but it sounds like she came out and is very strong. And again, she made really good decisions. She was in that situation because she was making good decisions, not because she was making bad ones. That needs to be praised. Praise your children. Identify for them when they are being resilient, when they are making these good choices.
And we have to leave it there. Sorry, but thank you, Susan, so much. I appreciate your time and your insight this hour.
Thanks.
Susan Eva Porter, our guest this hour. She has been an administrator, a teacher, and a counselor for 20 years in schools, and she's got a new book out. We've been talking about it today. It's called Bully Nation, Why America's Approach to Childhood Aggression is Bad for Everyone. And we're saying goodbye to our guest a little early this hour because I have some news that I want to share with you. And that is that March 29th is going to be my last day with you here on this Friday show. And I'm going to miss being here so much, miss talking with all of you, but I'm also excited to say that I'm going to be moving on to new adventures here at WPR, and I will be back on the air in a couple of months, co-hosting a new show with my friend, the guy answering phones today, and another familiar voice on Wisconsin Public Radio, Rob Ferret. And on Fridays and Strange Jams, my friend and colleague from To the Best of Our Knowledge will be taking over the reins in this hour. And she is an awesome interviewer. You'll be in great hands. And we'll have more information as we get a little closer to the transition there. But in the meantime, I'll see you next Friday here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Thanks for listening.